Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 393. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about cloisters and plazas and one big volcano as we go to Peru's second city, Arequipa. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's episode, I do have one favor to ask you, and that is the Amateur Traveler is again nominated for a podcast award at podcastawards.com, and we have been nominated every year since the podcast awards were formed in 2006, and we have lost every year since 2006. We have lost to Lou Mangello, very nice guy, from WDW Radio, which is a show about Walt Disney World. It would be nice to win for a change. So if you would be willing, if you could vote every day between now and the 15th of November 2013 for the Amateur Traveler, that would be greatly appreciated. Before we get into our interview today, we do have some news stories. The first one is good news for those flying in the U.S. The FAA has finally done what has been rumored is they have allowed airlines to let you use your devices in airplane mode, even during takeoff and landing. And so you don't have to put down your Kindle book or that movie you're watching during takeoff and landing. It's going to take a little bit of time to implement because the airlines, for some reason, have to come up with a plan that has to be approved by the FAA. Which is a step I must admit I do not completely understand. I would suspect that being a cleaning crew in an airplane toilet is probably not the most glamorous job, but it was a little surprising perhaps for one cleaning crew that recently found $1.9 million in gold bars. They were cleaning the toilet from a flight that had flown from Dubai to the Bangladeshi capital, and they discovered what they believed to be gold bars abandoned by someone who must have been trying to smuggle them in the country and got spooked and left them there. It's good to have a little walking around money when you go to Bangladesh. For links to all those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome back to the show Sam from indefiniteadventure.com, who's come to talk to us about Arequipa, Peru. Sam, welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
For those who don't remember, Sam, we talked about Extremadura in Spain not that long ago. So I have to admit, Sam, that when you pitched me to talk about Arequipa, whose name I may mispronounce several times during this show, I had to look it up on a map. So can we put it on a map for those people who, like me, had never heard about this?
Sure, yeah, and I too had never heard about it before we considered coming to Peru, but it's actually Peru's second largest city after Lima, and it's in the south, just inland, west of Lake Titicaca and south of Cusco, which is known to many people for Machu Picchu, of course.
And what led you to Peru in the first place? You're still in Peru as we're talking.
I'm in Ecuador, actually.
Oh, you're in Ecuador, sorry.
Yeah. Well, I've been traveling in South America for the last 9 months with my partner, and Peru is right there in the way, so we spent actually about 3 months in total in Peru, 1 month in Arequipa.
And what led you down to Arequipa, which you had never heard of? So it wasn't on your list when you went to South America?
Well, we'd heard about it before from people we met in Bolivia traveling through crossing paths, and it sounded like a really nice city to spend a while because we work as we travel, so it's convenient for us to rent an apartment and stay somewhere for a while. It seemed like a nice place to do that. And we spent a month there. That to visit, you certainly wouldn't need a month. It's quite a small city, and you could see most things in a few days or a week.
Okay. And why should someone go to Arequipa, and what should we see and do there?
It's a nice alternative to Cusco, which is extremely touristy. Arequipa is not very touristy, but in contrast, it doesn't have a whole load of sites. It does have some. It's a nice place to relax. It's very well known for its food among Peruvians as well. I was told by several Peruvians that it has the best food in all of Peru, which seemed like a high claim. It's also a good base for visiting some of the surrounding countryside, including the Colca Canyon, which is the deepest canyon in the world, although most people have never heard of that either.
It put me in that group. Okay. So what would we see in the city?
Well, the center of the city, like many other cities in South America, is the Plaza de Armas, the main square. It's the social hub of the city, if you like. It's pretty big, and like a lot of other Peruvian squares, it's very well maintained. The local government seem to invest a lot of money in maintaining them and keeping them clean and tidy, and there are always people watering the gardens and mowing the lawns. It's also full of pigeons, but that doesn't seem to deter people. You see people having their pictures taken with pigeons sitting on their head and on their shoulders in front of the fountain. And it's at the back of the square is the cathedral, which I believe is the widest cathedral in Peru. It's actually asymmetrical, which you don't notice at first because it's like a regular cathedral, but it's headed part to the right-hand side if you're looking at it from the square.
And where do we go next?
Well, there's loads of other churches and cathedrals. Several of them have sort of cloisters, which I guess were where the monks and nuns used to live. But they've now been turned into sort of nice shopping areas.
Okay.
They're nice places to just window shop and wander around. It's a lot of independent shops. It's not lots of chains, mostly handicrafts.
And you said several of those. Is one or two that you would recommend?
Yes, there's one in particular called Claustro de la Compañía. Mm-hmm. And it's just a block from the main square. It has an internal courtyard with a fountain. It's a nice place to get out of the sun, which can be pretty intense in Arequipa.
Even as far south as it is in Peru?
Yeah, it's quite high up. It's at 2,300 meters above sea level. It's very, very dry, very sunny. You need to use sun cream all the time, drink a lot of water. But actually, the lack of humidity was what bothered me most. My skin was always dry. But yeah, during the middle of the day, the sun is very intense, so it's nice to have places you can duck out into the shade.
And you say we're shopping at little shops. Is Arequipa known for anything particular in terms of shopping?
Yes, it has quite a history of textile making, especially textiles made from llama and alpaca wool, which is raised in the area, in the surrounding area. I mean, all over Peru you'll see alpacas and llamas, but this area in particular is known for its tradition of making anything and everything that you can out of llama and alpaca wool. There's actually another shop just outside of the center called Alpaca Mundo, which
Alpaca World, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty high-end. It's jumpers and scarves and coats and things. But it's a nice place to visit to see, because they have a place where you can actually see people collecting the wool, separating out the different parts that can be used for different things.
So carding the wool and spinning it and such.
Yeah, and there are people weaving rugs as well. It's free to go in. It's not a museum. You can just wander around and have a look, and obviously there are things for sale. Mm-hmm. We didn't buy any of those things. They were very expensive, but it's a nice place to see the kind of traditions of the city and how they... There's also a little explanation of how they color the wool, the different natural dyes that are used, and then obviously the process of weaving is on display.
Now, I had a chance when I was in Mexico once to talk, in fact, there's a video of this on the website, to talk with a weaver who was using ancient traditions and using things like the cochineal, the bug that's on a cactus for red. And is that the sort of thing you're talking about with the natural dyes?
Yes. I didn't see bugs. I saw, it was plants, I think indigo and I don't remember the others.
Excellent. And I distracted you. You were leading us away from the central square, and we were shopping at one of the old cloisters.
So there are a couple of ones like that. This one was the one, the Claustros de la Compañía was the one I found the nicest. There's a cafe in there as well. You can sit and have a drink in the cloisters. There are a couple of museums in the city. There's a municipal museum, which talks about the history of the city, which is not that long, because as I said before, there's not much pre-Columbian history there. But it's interesting enough if you want to find out about how the city has developed. There's a contemporary art museum a bit further out of town, near towards the train station, which is, as far as I could tell, no longer used for passenger trains, which was a nice place to go. It was mostly just artists from Arequipa and the surrounding area. And when my partner and I went, we were the only people there. They had to open it specially. Didn't seem terribly popular, but it was a nice place to go. So probably the most famous attraction in Arequipa is the Santa Catalina Monastery, which was actually not a monastery at all, but a nunnery, although everyone calls it a monastery when they talked about it in English. And that's a kind of a city within the city. It's almost like a labyrinth. If there was no indication of which way to go, you could easily get lost inside. It's pretty famous because it's used a lot in a lot of tourism campaign ads for Peru. It's very visually striking because everything inside is either painted in bright blue or bright red. It's pretty expensive by Peruvian standards to go in. It's cost 30 soles, the entrance. That's without a guide. You're just walking around on your own, but there are arrows to tell you which way to go. 30 soles is about $10 or £6. It's just gorgeous. It's a lovely place to walk around. It's a great place if you want to get some great photos. Especially, I would recommend in that case going in the late afternoon because of the light. Yeah, it's a great place for photography, especially in the early afternoon when the light is really sets off the colors. It also has a nice viewpoint at the top of one of the buildings where you get a nice panoramic view of the whole city.
And as you talk about the afternoon light, that just reminds me of, do you think now having spent a month there, is there a particularly good time of year to go to Arequipa?
So we were there in August, mm-hmm. and so that's winter, right? But everyone there told me that the weather is more like summer weather, what you'd expect of summer weather. It's dry, it's sunny, the sky is clear almost every day. I think it rained only one afternoon for a few minutes whilst we were there in a whole month. Apparently in the summer it's much wetter and cloudier, so the views will not be as good in the summer, I guess. And some of the views you can get from the city, even from the main square of the mountains surrounding it, are quite impressive. There are two volcanoes outside the city which you can see from almost everywhere. One of them is called Misti, I think, is dormant, so it has been active in the past, but not that recently. A lot of tourists go to Peru at this time of year anyway, because that's when we have holidays in Europe and North America, right?
Right.
So, but it's a good time to go there, definitely. It's not too hot. It was in the mid-20s Celsius during the day.
So about 70 degrees Fahrenheit, okay. Anything else we want to see in the city itself before we move on?
Yeah, so there's two more things. There's just outside of the center, there's a middle-class neighborhood called Yanawara, which it's not as old as the main part of town, but it's a pretty nice area. There's some nice restaurants and cafes. It also has a nice mirador, which is a viewpoint in its sort of central square, where you get a really nice unobstructed view of the volcano that I was just talking about and the rest of the city, which is in a bowl. Essentially, it's on the other side of the river from the center, so you get a view down into the center and up to the volcano as well. And the last thing, which is not really a site, but something that I think could be worth doing if you're interested, is, as is becoming more and more common in lots of cities, definitely in Europe and North America, but we've seen it more in South America now, there's a free walking tour of the city, which happens every day, I think, except for Sundays. And it starts in one of the squares in the center, not the main square, but just a few blocks from there, at 11 in the morning. And it goes we were with the group for a good 3 hours. It was a good free tour. The only complaints I had about it was that at the end of the tour, the guide was a bit pushy about getting a tip. He obviously had in mind the amount that he thought it was worth, which I didn't think was the point of a free tour. If it's a free tour, you should be free to give as much or as little as you like. It gave us a good grounding in the history of the city, and we also visited several restaurants and places which do food that gave us some free samples of some typical Peruvian things. With no pressure to stay and eat, but I suppose it was good for their business so that people might then go back. So that's something I would recommend as a kind of on your first day, maybe, to get a feel of the city and maybe to meet some other travelers.
And since that's the second time we've talked about food, what should we eat when we're in Arequipa? What is Arequipan cuisine?
Well, it's pretty close to the coast. It's not on the coast, but seafood does feature. I mean, obviously, ceviche is the national dish of Peru, which I didn't actually try because I'm not a huge fish fan of fish. But it's apparently some of the best ceviche in Peru is found in Arequipa, at least so the Arequipeños told me. And you can find that everywhere, all over the city. You find it in the cheapest places with the plastic chairs and where it's super cheap. And you'll find it in the gourmet restaurants as well, where it'll be.
And when you talk about super cheap, what is a dinner in a super cheap restaurant with a plastic chair is going to cost me?
So a very, very common thing to find is a almuerzo, which is a lunch menu, basically, which usually in Peru consists of a soup, a main, sometimes a dessert, and a drink. And that will be the cheapest ones you could find would be about $6, which is about $2.
Wow. Okay.
And you'll find lots of them that include ceviche. There'll be others that have some kind of meat and potatoes, usually. My partner and I are mostly vegetarian, so we were looking out for the vegetarian ones, which was surprisingly easy to find, actually. We later heard that there are that many vegetarian eateries in Peru because a lot of people are apparently prescribed by their doctor to eat vegetarian at least so many times a week or something.
Interesting.
Health reasons. Yeah. A vegetarian place I'd recommend in particular in Arequipa was called Como en Casa. So like at home, I guess.
Okay.
They just did lunch, which was $9, so slightly more expensive.
So really expensive, $3.
Yeah, $3, $2.20 or something. They call it a buffet, which in Peru doesn't mean all you can eat. It just means there's a selection of things that you point and tell the waiter what you want.
Okay.
And yeah, that's a good place to go. This is not at all Peruvian, but it was one of our favorite places in the town. It was called Crepissimo, which did crepes and styled itself as a kind of French cafe.
Well, I think I had read that there is a French influence in the city.
Well, this restaurant is actually part of or next to the French Cultural Center, which puts on events. We were there over French Independence Day, the 14th of July, and they had some kind of celebration at this center. It's next to the restaurant that I just mentioned. They also do French courses, and there's a French library. Yeah, which was a surprise to us. I didn't expect to find that much of a French influence in the city. I don't know historically what the influence has been.
Yeah, I think I had just seen pictures of some of the architecture that could have come right out of Paris. And didn't know, again, also, as you didn't know the history of what the connection was there. To my ear, you seem facile in the Spanish language. We're talking about a city that doesn't get as much tourism, easy to get around, even if you don't know Spanish, or?
Oh, that's always a difficult question, because I do speak Spanish.
You do speak Spanish, yeah.
Okay, I mean, my partner doesn't speak Spanish, and when we would go off and do our own thing, he never had much problems making himself understood. I mean, the main form of transport around the city is taxi. There are buses, but it's almost impossible to discover where they go.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So the most difficult thing might be communicating with a taxi driver who I don't think would speak much English, but in restaurants, especially in ones like the French place I was just talking about, I think they would speak some English. I'm pretty sure I heard them speaking English. In the kind of cheap places, yeah, you're not going to expect them to speak English, but there you just point and smile.
That's how I get by. Excellent. And then you've got some sites outside the city we should get to.
So as I mentioned before, it's nearby the Colca Canyon, which is the deepest canyon in the world. The biggest town on the edge of the canyon is called Chivay, which is about 3 or 4 hours by bus outside of Arequipa. So it's not quite a day trip. There are lots of tour agencies in Arequipa that organize day trips to the canyon, but this means leaving before sunrise and getting back very late, which because we had time, we were staying there for a month, we didn't feel the need to do it in such a rush, but you can do it like that if you want.
Because it's about 100 miles from Arequipa, have I got that right?
That sounds about right, yeah. But okay. It's a pretty windy
160
road.
Kilometers or so, okay.
Yeah, so we took a bus out to Chivay and then stayed a couple of nights there and did some hikes from the town. What is quite popular is to do multi-day hikes into the canyon. So you hike along the ridge and down into the canyon, camp at the bottom, and hike back up. We didn't do that because we don't camp.
Well, and we're talking about a canyon that I can picture the Grand Canyon because I've been there. Mm. We're talking about something that's twice as deep. So that sounds like that would be quite a day's hike, well, especially coming back up again.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Definitely. The most popular place to go in the canyon, which we actually didn't get to, is called Cabana Conde, which is at the far west end of the canyon from Chivay, which is closer to Arequipa. And there's a place there where it's very common to see condors crossing the canyon. Lots of people go there just for watching the condors. In Chivay, which is quite a small town, there are still several day trips you can do from there, day hikes, including a hike you can do down to the thermal baths. There are thermal baths just on the edge of the canyon, essentially. One other thing that the Chivay has is an astronomical observatory because it's pretty high up. And on the rare occasions when it's clear skies, which was unfortunately not whilst we were there, well, it would be clear during the day in the morning and then the afternoon, the evening, and at night it would be completely cloudy. So we didn't actually go to the observatory. We didn't seem worth it when it was cloudy, but it looked like it would be a really interesting place to go if you're interested in astronomy.
Okay.
So the hike we did from Chivay was just a couple of hours along the edge of the canyon. We took a local bus from Chivay out to a small town called Yungkai and hiked basically across part of the canyon. This part of the canyon is not as deep as the deep part that we were talking about before, which is where you can see the condors. So we just hiked across a bridge across the river that was at the bottom of the canyon, then up the other side to another town on the other side of the canyon, and then took a shared bus back to Chivay. And that was a nice way to get a taste of what the area around the canyon is like without having to do this multi-day camping, hardcore trekking.
Okay. But there are those options for the hardcore trekkers among us who are listening.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in Arequipa, there's no shortage of tour travel agencies that will help you organize that.
Okay. And then you have one more stop for us.
I was going to talk more about how you could incorporate Arequipa into a southern Peru itinerary.
Please do.
So a lot of people include Arequipa as a stop on the kind of southern Peru itinerary. We came in to Peru from Bolivia, from Lake Titicaca, which is about 8 hours by bus from Arequipa. And it's a nice bus ride. You're going through wilderness. There's basically nothing and lots of volcanoes, and you'll see wild llama roaming around. And then if you're heading north from there, like we did, we carried on to Nazca, which is famous for the Nazca lines.
Sure.
Yeah. We did that by an overnight bus from Arequipa. So it was reasonably far, 10 hours or so by bus.
And you just did the Nazca lines from the ground point of view?
We did, yes. Yes, because you can fly over them. Mm-hmm. Often people have to wait a long time for the haze to clear because you're in the desert, so it's very hazy when it's windy. So people end up waiting a long time. It's very expensive, at least $80 for maybe 1 hour flight. Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's nearly 40 lunches in Arequipa.
Yeah, a whole month's worth, right? I also heard that it's pretty shaky, and if you suffer from motion sickness, which I do sometimes, it might not be the best idea.
Mm-hmm.
It used to also have a reputation of being dangerous.
Ah, okay. Not well regulated.
It's much better regulated now, and that's partly why it's more expensive.
Sure, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, but there were crashes 10 years ago. There were quite a few. But yeah, we just visited. There's a museum in the town, and which explains the history of the lines and how they were made and the theories behind them. Mm-hmm. And there's also an observatory which talks about the possible connections between the lines and the stars, and also about Maria Reicher, who is the German anthropologist, I think she's an anthropologist, or an archaeologist, who basically spent her life trying to decipher them.
Mm-hmm.
And we visited those things before going to see the lines, which was really... really added to the experience a lot, definitely. And there's a, by the side of the road in the desert, you wouldn't, just driving along the road, you wouldn't know that there was anything in the desert at all from that level. You can't see them at all. But there's a man-made mirador. So you just climb up this sort of scaffolding structure, okay. and you can see two or three, depending on the weather, of the characters. We found it was a nice way to do it if you don't want to spend the money and the time on doing the flight. Okay. Obviously, with the flight, you'll see a lot more of them. There are about 12, I think, you can see from flying. And then, you can keep going towards Lima. There are a few more stops on the way which might be worth considering, like Huacachina, which is an oasis in the desert surrounded by sand dunes. It's a natural oasis. We stopped there for maybe 3 nights, which was a bit too long. It's a tiny, tiny little place. And it's reasonably popular with the backpacker crowd. It's a popular place to go sandboarding.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
On the coast, there's a place called Paracas, which is a national reserve. And just off the coast, there are some islands called the Islas Ballestas, which are sometimes referred to as the poor man's Galapagos. I haven't been to the Galapagos, so I can't compare. But if you're really into wildlife, especially sea lions, seals, penguins, and other birds, then it's a nice place to visit. Yeah, and then you can carry on up to Lima. Some people from Arequipa then also go north to Cusco.
Sure.
But we actually met, one of the reasons we were quite pleased with our decision to go to Arequipa and not Cusco to stay for a month, was we met several people who had come to Arequipa from Cusco and said how much nicer they thought it was. Because as I said before, it's much less touristy. It has better weather than Cusco. Cusco's pretty cold.
Cusco is higher still, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, it is. I think it's about 1,000 meters higher.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's that as well. Yeah, we were surprised by how many, because Cusco, I mean, everyone, if you know anything about Peru, you've heard of Lima and Cusco and Machu Picchu, right?
So right.
Mm-hmm. We were surprised that it's that famous, but so many people said they preferred Arequipa over Cusco, which was interesting.
Excellent. Some sort of wrapping up kind of questions. You're standing in the prettiest spot in Arequipa. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
I think it would be at the top of the monastery, or the nunnery, mm-hmm. Santa Catalina, at sunset, looking over the city, which has the nickname the White City, because it has a lot of buildings which are white,
mm-hmm.
and white stone. And you've got the volcano in the background, and the light is turning everything orange, and the sky is clear blue, and it's just gorgeous.
What was the biggest surprise about Arequipa?
Considering it's not such a well-known city in Peru, I was surprised how good the infrastructure was for tourism and how much choice there was of food and things to see.
Well, it sounds like they get a fair amount of Peruvian tourism from what you were saying.
Yes, it seems to be a much more popular place for Peruvians to go on holiday than.
Mm-hmm.
We knew it was at altitude, but I didn't know it would be so dry all the time, mm-hmm. and that was a bit of a surprise. I mean, I was using moisturizer every day, and you really need like sunblock and something for your lips. You get really dry lips, and drinking lots of water. That was something I didn't expect. Lack of preparation, I suppose.
Before we get to my last three questions, anything else we should know before we go to Arequipa?
They have regular earthquakes in Arequipa.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were there for a month, and there was one more or less every week.
Most places that have fault lines have regular earthquakes, but people don't feel them. You're talking about feeling regular earthquakes every week.
Yeah, once a week we felt the earthquake, but it was
that's unusual.
It was minor. I mean, it was the buildings are built for it. Uh-huh. I mean, I'd be in bed sometimes and it would just feel shaking, which for me is a very, very strange experience. The first time it happened, I was on the toilet and I didn't know what to do. But it was very minor, and everyone's used to it. There are signs everywhere in town saying this building is earthquake secure, and here is a meeting point like in the aftermath of an earthquake.
Interesting.
So I mean, if you come from a place which is not on a fault line at all, this is something to bear in mind, that you will feel an earthquake probably, but it's nothing to worry about.
Okay. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Arequipa.
People love their dogs, and
okay.
they dress them up. They put them in little coats, which to me is extremely weird. I'm sure there are other places in the world where people do this, but I just found that very odd.
Little llama wool coats or something?
Probably not that fancy. Just like little, kind of like baby grows, but for a dog.
Huh, and just commonly?
Yeah, just on the street, you'd see people walking their dog in a little coat. More so, I mean, in other parts of Peru, which are colder, like in Lima, for example, this was more common because Arequipa's not very cold. So people, I guess they didn't feel like their dog needed it. But
excellent. Yeah. Last two questions. Finish the sentence. You really know you're in Arequipa when what?
When you're standing in the square surrounded by pigeons trying to land on you, and you've got a view of this huge colonial cathedral and two volcanoes in the background, which may or may not erupt at any moment.
I think there's a reason you may be feeling earthquakes regularly in Arequipa. And then if you had to summarize Arequipa in three words, what three words would you use?
I'd go with proud.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Colonial and shaky.
Okay. And when you say proud, a second city sort of proud, that we're not as big as Lima, but we've got a lot to offer?
Yes. Yeah. The people, the Arequipeños, are very proud of being from Arequipa. In fact, the rest of Peru kind of jokes that that you need a separate passport to go to Arequipa. they think of themselves as different from the rest of Peru.
Interesting.
Very proud of it.
Well, Sam, thanks so much for coming back on the show and telling us about Arequipa and southern Peru. If people wanted to read more about your travels, where should they go?
They can go to our blog, which is at indefiniteadventure.com. And they can follow us on Facebook with the same name, facebook.com/indefiniteadventure. And we're also on Twitter as indefiniteadven.
Yes, you can't have it quite that long there.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, cool. Thanks for coming back on The Amateur Traveler.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Chris.
I announced on the last show that the iTunes enhanced version of the show may be going away soon. Some update on that. It may not have to, although I still have to decide if it makes sense to continue to do it since Apple, who had supported it, is clearly moving away from it. But more information about that next week. If you happen to be in Belgium, near Antwerp or Brussels, I'm heading there next week. So if you want to get together or just have some suggestions for what I should see while I'm on a press trip there, send me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. I got an email this week from Donna, who said, "First, I am chugging through every episode in order. Yours is my favorite podcast, so I am always sad when I catch up with you. My backup podcast is Rick Steves, which is also nice. From a different slant and for my taste, Amateur Traveler is more interesting." And I should point out, Rick Steves did just win the Lowell Thomas Award for broadcast, so I appreciate being compared to that. And then Donna went on to talk about the self-interviews that I occasionally do. And I know that some of you don't like those shows as well. And actually, honestly, I don't like them as well because I like hearing other people's stories. And I did want to clarify one thing. Donna, I think, and some other people thought that those shows were scripted. And I never actually script anything. I don't script shows, presentations, classes, or even sermons. So that is not the case. My apologies if it sounds that way. And then I think Donna was a little concerned that I may not be breathing. I do talk fast, and I realize I do, and I probably talk more fast when I get excited about something. I will be doing more of their shows, so I'll try and figure out a better way to do them, either by breaking them up with more audio that I record during the trip, or by having somebody interview me. That's a little more difficult logistically. So if you have any suggestions, let me know. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. Join our Facebook community, facebook.com/amateurtraveler, and vote for The Amateur Traveler at podcastawards.com. You can vote every day, and you can get your friends to vote as well. You can follow me on Twitter @Chris2X, and as always, thanks so much for listening.